Catherine Austin Fitz back with us. We're going to take your calls this hour as we talk about all these strange things that have been happening. Have you ever gone through a period, Catherine, as we are right now, where so many strange events, justified or otherwise, are happening to us?
Well, I have, in the sense that, you know, I went through an 11-year enemy of the state process and in the U.S., but I kind of feel like I'm welcoming the entire planet into my world. So, you know, I've lived through something that was this strange and this incoherent, but I haven't shared it with, you know, the entire planet before. This is new.
It is new stuff, too. And you always do a great job for us, Catherine. People call my show. I get emails constantly from people. What's the Federal Reserve up to? They're printing fiat money like crazy. Nothing backs it up. But, boy, they're having a field day, aren't they?
So, you know, one expression is the Fed is buying the market. We're essentially going through a new round of financial bailouts like we did in 2008 and 2012. You know, one of the things I wonder, George, if they weren't in the room and said, okay, we got a new, you know, another 24 to 29 trillion bailouts again. And, you know, Henry Kissinger said, look, they're just not going to buy it. We have to come up with a cover story. So, you know, but the same thing is happening. And unfortunately, at this point, if you look at what's going on in state and local governments, it looks to me like the central bankers are now exercising a much greater level of central control. So this is really the Fed buying Main Street, and you're going to see the central bankers basically with a much more direct line and control of state and local areas and places. And I think we're in for a major reengineering of how the economy works and how real estate is owned. And, of course, if, you know, if the mark of the beast happens, then, you know, before then we may have a civil war, and let's hope the people win.
The unemployment rate is around 47 million. It should start going down as more and more businesses and restaurants and places like that start opening up again in terms of capacity. Lots of them are at 25% of capacity right now, but they're going to go to 50 soon. And that'll start helping a little bit. But it's going to take, I think, at least a couple of years to even get back to where we were before this mess started, Catherine.
I don't think they intend to go back. I think we're in the middle of a major reengineering. It's going to go forward. And there's a huge layer of state and local government layoffs that are coming. We just saw the Minneapolis City Council say they wanted to cancel the police force. Very bad idea.
Crazy.
It's trying to buy real estate cheap.
If you're a criminal, move to Minneapolis, right?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. No, you know, this is a dreadful idea. But if you look at what's happened to state and local revenues, they're going to have to start laying off significant amounts of people. So, and I think the question is, you know, what is the reengineering that the leadership and the central, it's basically the central bankers. What is the reengineering the central bankers want to do? Is it, you know, are we going to let them do it? And how is this going to sort out? So I think, you know, I think we're in the middle of World War III, and I think World War III is far from over.
You think we're in the middle of World War III, the economic world war, huh?
Right. So it's going to be fought out with invisible means. But for example, one of my questions is, in the middle of March, did China start refusing to take dollars? Because if you look at the U.S.-China trade deficit, it's been coming down at very high speed. You know, so you have a trade war going on. You have a war going on around the world of the reserve currency. And essentially, with the Bretton Woods system coming down, there's a major, major debate about what the new models are going to be. And if you look at sort of the false prosperity that the China trade kept going in the United States, if the Chinese won't take dollars or a lot of dollars, it's over. So you're going to have to radically re-engineer the U.S. economy, and that's exactly what's going on. We just saw the trade deficit numbers come out on Friday, but they didn't post the, you know, the individual country trade, and I'm waiting for Commerce to post those on their website. But it wouldn't surprise me. We saw the March U.S.-China trade deficit come down by over 50% at high speed. Wouldn't surprise me if the April numbers had it halved again.
All right, let's go to the phones. Thomas in La Jolla, California gets us started. Hey, Tom.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call. And Catherine, beautiful work that you're doing. Catherine, Comment then a question. It seems to me that there is a connection, if you will, between the pharmaceutical cartels, aerospace, and the missing $21 trillion from the federal budget. And from where I stand, this seems to go back to World War II, when IG Farben was the biggest cartel on the planet. And part of the agreement after World War II was to break up IG Farben. It took over 60 years, I believe. They finally concluded that it was broken up in 2003, but it broke up into several subsidiaries, like Bayer, for example. And it seems to me that there's a connection between the missing $21 trillion, aerospace, and the pharmaceutical companies, and going back to IG Farben again. And I was wondering if you could connect the dots on that.
So the way I would say it, we wrote a wrap-up on this a couple of years ago. It was called Out of Control, and it was really about our Control 101. It was about how you manage and control a planet and all the resources on it. But I would say that pharmaceuticals is part of control. Aerospace is increasingly part of control. Traditionally, we've run the physical control of the planet by controlling the sea lanes, and that was the Bretton Woods system. So the U.S. Navy and the British Navy, the Anglo-American Alliance, has basically run the planet by controlling the sea lanes and trade, and it was an open trade model. Now with satellites, a lot of this changed with satellites. Now satellites and the satellite lanes are becoming as important as the sea lane, and so control more often than not is implemented from information technology coming from the suborbital platform. But there's no doubt that a population which is heavily drugged or addicted is a lot easier to control and manipulate than one that's not. So pharmaceuticals have always been in the mix, and pharmaceuticals do a lot of good. You know, I'm a great believer that, you have pharmaceutical drugs. Antibiotics, in my experience, work. God, I'm very pleased to have them. So it's absolutely a mixed bag, but I would say they're integrated in terms of control. And I'll tell you one little interesting tidbit. When the budget deal busted in 1995, my intelligence says that's when they made the deal or the decision to steal the $21 trillion. The deal busted in November, and the next month was when the $21 trillion started to go missing. The housing bubble started to be engineered, and one other thing happened, and you won't believe what it was. The FDA approved OxyContin going forward, and if you look at the predatory lending and usury and the housing bubble, it very much targeted the same neighborhoods as were targeted with OxyContin. And it wouldn't surprise me, George, if you looked at the riots going on now. I bet if we still had the Community Wizard software and we could map, you know, where OxyContin and the pill mills really hit versus the predatory lending on the housing bubble, yeah, versus where the riots are now versus where the opportunity zones are, we would see remarkable patterns. That's what my guess is.
Catherine, some of my sources. Oh, go ahead. Finish up. We got a little lag because of the Netherlands. Go ahead.
You go ahead.
Okay. Well, no, you go ahead. No, I will. One of my sources tells me that there are some within the President Trump administration who might want to invoke the 25th Amendment and basically declare him unfit for the presidency. Do you think that's conceivable, even possible?
I think it would be strategically a terrible mistake. I don't, you know, there's nothing. I've seen no indication, other than he has a thin skin, I've seen no indication that he's unfit for the presidency. You know, if anything, what Trump has done that is most defended is to tell the truth. And, you know, he can be he's very much like an entrepreneur, a real estate entrepreneur. And he tells the truth, and, you know, he can be.
Without the finesse.
He can be very. you know, he can hurt people's feelings. You know, he hurts a lot of feelings. The thing I love about the guy is, you know, he oftentimes will tell it like it is, and nobody wants to hear it. You know, nobody wants to hear that the emperor has no clothes. So nobody wants to hear, CNN doesn't want to hear that they're fake news, but they are. And, you know, when coronavirus first happened, he said, look, it's a hoax. He was right.
You know, if you're at a party and, you know, somebody comes in and let's say they're dressed in a horrible outfit, do you go up to that person and say, you know, you look great? Or do you say that's a horrible outfit? I think he's the kind of guy to say that doesn't look good on you.
Well, so he'll pop out with those comments. But the other thing is, he is a promoter. You know, the Buddhist says, with our thoughts, we invent our world. And Trump, as a real estate developer, understands that the way you build a great economy is you put out a positive vision and you encourage everybody into it. And it's very interesting, when he won the election, if you looked at polls of both Republicans and Democrats, a very high percentage of the population wanted to stop the fighting and get on board with, yeah, let's make America great again. And you had many Democrats who didn't want Trump as president, and they said, okay, we're willing to go to work and make America great, but we're going to, you know, make our Democratic parties locally great and, you know, get a Democrat in, which is, of course, the American process. And what was interesting is the, you know, the factions at the top, both in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, you know, decided, no, we're going to have World War III. And one of the reasons, George, is if you look at their liabilities for health care fraud, for financial fraud, their liabilities are off the charts. From what I've observed since the 2016 election, my guess is that the kickback system in Washington went much deeper down the bureaucracy than even I had suspected. So I think if you look at the, you know, the extent to which the American establishment is deeply vested, whether by, you know, financial addiction or other kinds of addiction or, you know, just their liabilities, you know, they are really stuck in the old model. And, you know, if you look at the reengineering going on, somebody's decided to basically reset the whole thing from scratch because, you know, but they want to protect their liabilities in the process. And I think that's why you're seeing the Bushes and or part of the reason you're seeing the Bushes and the Powells, you know, come out. Part of it is, again, the management style. So real estate, I always said in 2016 that the presidency is not a entry-level position.
Yep.
You know, and Trump is an entrepreneur and a businessman. You know, we all love him because he can count, but at the same time, there's no reason to hurt people's feelings unnecessarily to get something done. It's not useful. So I think that's been part of the problem.
You're right. First-time caller Alfonso in San Diego, California. Hello there, Alfonso. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing, George?
Great. Thank you.
I have a question for your host, and here's a question, Pip. Nobody has mentioned about this virus. Does every country that has been attacked or invaded by this virus, is it the same strain?
That's an interesting question. Now, I have been told it's mutated somewhat, Catherine, from its original discovery in December of last year. But I would guess that the strand is probably the same. Have you heard otherwise?
Well, so I think this is an excellent question because there's no evidence to suggest to me that we're looking at one phenomena. You know, we talk about it as one thing and it's one phenomena globally, and I think that's a gross oversimplification. You know, the other thing is a lot of the deaths are happening in areas where there are other problems. So, you know, you have serious environmental problems, pollution, you have real indications of problems from vaccination programs, all sorts of other things going on. So this is a complex phenomena, and to me there's no indication that it's one thing. It certainly doesn't follow an infectious pattern. You know, if you had an infectious pattern, why is there no problem in Japan? Why is there no problem in many of the Asian countries around China that are much closer to Wuhan than the United States? So if you look at the patterns around the world, particularly of cases and deaths, it's not behaving like one infectious thing.
Good point. Michael's with us, Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hey, Michael.
Hi. You know, Catherine, over the many years that I've heard you on this show, I've always been your strongest supporter. I don't recall ever disagreeing with you. I'm going to have to disagree with you tonight because I haven't heard you at any point in this conversation declare your candidacy for the presidency. So let's take apart what you have said here tonight. You have identified what I call the beast of vaccine economics, and you have described the greatest salesman that the world has ever seen for the beast of vaccine economics. His name is Donald Trump. He has this warp speed program going to get the mark of the beast into the arm of every evangelical in America, and they are falling for it. So with 30 million evangelicals in the last election, he got over Hillary Clinton. But in 2012, when 15 million of them, half of them, sat out because their pastor said, you know, Romney's no real Christian, and the Mormon faith is a heresy. So here's the problem. We now have Catherine Austin Fitz, who should have been the Republican nominee. We now have Catherine Austin Fitz telling us that the mark of the beast is being hugely advanced by the man best qualified to do it, Donald Trump. What's going to happen to my evangelicals here in Virginia Beach, evangelical haven? What's going to happen if Catherine Fitz doesn't step forward to give us an alternative to the ultimate con man?
All right, let's react to that, Catherine, right after the break. Just keep that thought. Catherine Austin Fitz for president, folks. What do you think about that? That's a possibility. We're going to come back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, back with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, so Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia, wants to know if you're going to run for president or why you haven't.
Well, there are two reasons I wouldn't run for president. Two, I wouldn't make a good president. It's not, you know, some people are good at politics, some people are good at money, and I'm good at money. I would not say that I'm, you know, if you think Trump is thin-skinned, I'm thin-skinned too. In that, when I see people hurt, you know, I tend to lose, I tend to not be as patient as a good politician would be. So that's number one. Number two, if, you know, I always tell people the Secret Service guns turn outward and they turn inward. In a highly centralized system, you don't have the freedom to do many things. And I think at this point, we've seen so much centralization of the economy and political power that I don't think anybody in the White House has the support from the general population to do what they need. You know, and at this point, it's too dangerous. Presidents get assassinated. So if you look at what Trump is doing on Operation Warp Speed and what he's doing on injectables, I'll call it this, relative to what he said in the campaign, you know, he's completely contradicting himself. And I just think it's because he's under so much pressure. You know, I can't say if it's kickbacks or, you know, they threaten your family. But I've had my family threatened, George, and I don't think that someone like me can get, I think I can get much more publishing the Salieri Report, much more done for people and decentralizing power. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to work to help the centralized team centralize more. I would much rather work for the decentralized team and help people be safe and make it through this process. I'm interested in building a human civilization. You can't do that in as the president of the United States. So that's the other team. I'm on the pro-decentralization team, and that's where I'm going to stay.
Well, a couple of years ago, WorldNet Daily wrote a huge article about me, that there was a group that was going to try to approach me to run. Of course, you know, I want this program. This program is where I get my biggest message out to the masses.
Right.
And you.
Transparency is so important.
Absolutely.
Transparency is so important. So, and, you know, to the extent that Trump can, or any politician in the White House can get something done, it's because they have tremendous population support for that policy. So if you want to make a radical change in policy, you know, we were trained in Washington to believe that you needed 80% of the population to say, okay, we want you to go to the right, and then you could change the policy. But without that kind of support, and right now America is financially addicted to getting checks from Washington, and so generally the population has not supported financially responsible solutions. We'll see what happens next.
Absolutely. Mark in New Hampshire, let's get us started here. Marco, go ahead.
Well, thank you, George and Catherine. Godspeed to you.
Thank you.
A couple of statements for both George and you, Catherine. Back in 1989, under Ronald Reagan, George Shultz signed into law that the Russians would write the public school curriculum for American public schools. And you can quote me on that. You happen to bring up George Shultz, I was kind of shocked, but you're in the know. And that's an answer to where the $21 trillion went, because obviously people can't count very well anymore. A little joke there, but...
I laughed.
And George.
Yeah.
You interviewed Dr. David Adair a couple of days ago.
Right.
And this has to do with money, too, so I'm still on the same subject. But he was privy to work with Dr. Edward Teller, and he was also privy to certain places that we're not. And I mentioned something about lights. David had mentioned the lights in the facility he was in. He had never experienced that type of lighting before because it cast no shadows. And the screw jacks that raised the platform that could hold a 757 up above to ground level, he said that impressed him, the amount of money it took to make those screw jacks, and that in this installation to make this deck go up to ground level. And then he actually was privy to technology, an impulse engine that had breached, and which was in the generals there said it wasn't ours. And he was very privy to some really strategic information and places, and you wonder where all the money went. And then $10 billion to have President Gorbachev step down, that's a fact, I believe, and the Gorbachev Society is out in California now at the Presidio. Is this true, Catherine?
Do you know about that, Catherine?
No, but I will say, back to the original description of George Shultz, that if you look at the syndicates who finance Bolshevism, they're the same syndicates that are pushing for what I would say is dreadful curriculum in the U.S. system. You know, and of course, it always takes us back to the central bankers. So in that sense, there, you know, I think there is a connection. But, you know, if you look at their philosophy, I don't think they believe in any of these philosophies. They simply believe in centralizing and consolidating power.
Let's go to Mike in New Jersey now. Welcome to the program, Michael. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing over there, George?
Good, Mike.
Catherine, I just got to say I love the show. And I've been fans of you for a long time. Listen, we're on the same side. So my comments to you, don't take them the wrong way, okay? Because we're on the same side. We're all friends here, okay? The problem is with the media today and so-called experts is they're so obsessed with Trump. And the left obviously tries to control the narrative, so I know you guys are reacting to it. We don't do our homework anymore. We're just reacting, right? You got to read the Stimulus Act, Catherine, the CARES Act, specifically the definition for central banking. central banking system's been abolished by the CARES Act. They snuck it in there. It's all over. It's history. There's no more Federal Reserve. Next, you have to read a presidential order from 2017 by the president. He is now going to base our dollar, because now we control the Federal Reserve, we control the currency. They're going to base our dollar on deep space minerals. It's in the 2017 presidential order. You're going to have to look it up. But that's why SpaceX Dragon is so important, because it's going to do some deep space mining that nobody knows about, and it's going to bring it back. Our dollar is going to skyrocket, and we're going to say bye-bye to China. Bye-bye, you two.
Well, let's see what happens with that. I don't know. Interesting thoughts there, Catherine.
So let's divide that up between did Trump take over the central bank? And I have to tell you, George, my description of that is, I disagree 100%.
Oh, I think the Federal Reserve is still doing its thing, isn't it?
Well, I think the central bank took over Trump. So I think it's the opposite. As to the second issue, that's a longer conversation. But I do think there is a real war going on with China, and it remains to be seen, who comes out on top.
Right. I can't say that we can sweep China under the carpet. I don't think they're going to go away that easy.
Well, here's the thing. On one hand, you can argue we have China in a bear trap, in a dollar bear trap, because they've taken on so much leverage since the financial crisis. At the same time, if you look at how their currency, bond markets, and their position in terms of taking over the sea lanes in Southeast Asia and the South China Sea, they are doing remarkably well through this. So if the rumors are true that they're not taking dollars or they're taking a lot less dollars, I don't know. I just think the war is on. I think we're in World War III right now, and it's really instigated by the war with China, and that's why you're seeing so much reengineering in the country as well, because you can't keep the false prosperity going if you've got to rebalance at high speed with China. So how this war turns out is yet to be determined. My concern is, if you look at the push to chip everybody and hook them up to the Jedi cloud to keep the dollar going as a reserve currency, or to keep that syndicate, pushing for a unipolar model, they need to chip everybody. And my attitude is, I'd rather live in a multipolar world unchipped than to have the dollar syndicate extend itself by hooking us all up and returning to slavery.
Good point. Here's Cornelius in Louisiana. Hi, Cornelius.
Hey, George and Catherine. I'm the God, Guns, and Gold man, the Bible, Bullets, and Beans man, telling everybody to get ready there, Miss Catherine.
You got to trademark that.
I'm homesick for a Southern accent, so it's great to hear your voice.
Catherine, I got a great DVD with you and Grant Jeffrey about chipping and stuff, so I still got that, and I've been talking to you before. Uh-huh. And I love you. And George, I can tell you love her too. And Catherine's right on the ball. If we accept this vaccine, if they make us all take it, we know it's the mark of the beast. So I'm telling all our Christians,
Don't call it a vaccine. Do not call it. It's not a vaccine. Vaccine under law is a medicine. This is not a medicine. Okay. So you got to call it an injectable, because then they don't get the legal and financial protection. That's the fraud. By calling it a vaccine, we're making it so much easier for them to do this. So we got to call it an injectable.
Good question. It's a fraud
to call it a vaccine. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Cornelius. Appreciate your comments, as usual. Catherine, we've got some great callers on this program. They're caring people, too.
Why I love Cornelius is exactly why I love American, and I'm proud to be American.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, back to Minneapolis for a moment. Are they actually thinking of doing away with their police department?
That's what's been announced. I don't know the details. You have to see the details of the budget.
What are they going to replace it with? You can't have a lawless city without any security or police. That doesn't make sense.
Yes, it does. If you want to come into Minneapolis and buy a ton of real estate cheap, it makes total sense.
Well, that's, I lived in Minneapolis for a year, Minneapolis, St. Paul. They're beautiful regions, but my God, you can't do away with your police force. Who do you call when someone's breaking into your house?
Well, that's exactly, let me say it again. If you want to pick up a lot of real estate cheap, what you do is you destroy a place, and then you pick up the real estate, and then you fix it and make a fortune. So, you know, if you look at what's happening in Minneapolis, somebody's angling for a major reengineering of the whole place.
Because, if they do away with now, the police department, somebody goes in to rob a bank at gunpoint, who are they going to call to stop this person?
Apparently they're going to call their friendly community force.
The militia. This is crazy. This is lunacy. Now, the federal government's going to have to step in. Enough is enough. You can't destroy a city because of the actions of one dumb cop. You can't do that, or several dumb cops.
But, you know, here's the thing. This is a fix, George. This has nothing to do with one stupid cop. And if you look at how many cops have saved lives for the last year or two in Minneapolis, and how many 96 policemen and local law enforcement have died in the line of duty in the last year in the United States. So this has nothing to do with the real performance of police. This has to do with the fact that you've got the pro-centralization team ready to move in and take up, you know,
it's
much
weird.
Greater control. Yeah. Make no mistake about it. When you slam the revenues of small business and Main Street, and then of the local municipalities, you're angling to, you know, to assert central control. That's what this is about.
This is crazy. And both of them, Floyd and the police officer who killed him, they knew each other. They worked together as security guards at a bar restaurant. And
well, if you look at the details on what happened, you know, there's some very unusual
Yes,
patterns.
The whole thing is strange.
Study the facts.
I would hope it comes out in the trial because, you know, we need some more answers to this very bizarre situation. I mean, I'm getting sources now, Catherine, saying that this was a setup to create what you've just talked about.
So what I want to see, George, is not the trial. I want to see the kickback packages and the control files on the Minneapolis City Council that just did this vote.
Exactly. Catherine, thank you. We're out of time. Let's get back to you later. Be safe in the Netherlands. Let's get you back in the States.